That should do it.
Good morning, everybody. It is Tuesday, April 8th, and we are at a regularly scheduled Financial Audit Advisory Committee meeting. Present at the start of the meeting, why don't we just go around the room and introduce ourselves. Ruth Ann Fuller, Chair.
Tony McKell. Matthew Hunt, Principal, Clifton Larson Allen.
Margaret Albrecht, School Committee Member. Marissa Batista, Engagement Director with
Clifton
Larson Allen.
Dave
Wilhelmson. Vicki Danberg, Alderman. Gail Deegan.
And Lenny Gentile, Alderman. A wet Alderman.
A wet one, yeah.
Marissa and Matt, welcome, and a special welcome also to Margaret, who is replacing Matt Hills as the school committee rep and is very good with numbers and very familiar with audits also, so she brings a good skill set to the committee. And this is kind of our normal time of year to meet with our auditors. And Matt, a special welcome to you, as this is your first time with us officially. And I think our agenda is to do two things. One is to hear from the auditors about anything that is on their mind, but secondly, and probably even more importantly, to give some guidance to Marissa and Matt as they begin the audit about special areas of concern that are on our mind. Dave Wilkinson and I had a chance to chat about some areas that might be promising for a deep dive, but other committee members may have thoughts as well. And with that, do you guys want to start us off?
Sure, we can definitely start off. And definitely, one of my main goals and Marissa's main goals here today is really more to listen. Like you said, I really want to hear from the members of the committee as to what your concerns are for the FY14 audit. But there are a couple things that I'd like to go over. First, as it relates to scheduling matters, deadlines, things of that nature. So the committee is aware we are starting preliminary field work on the audit the week of April 14th. That will include the audit of the retirement system as of 12/31/13. We're scheduled to block out 2 weeks. It may not take the full 2 weeks to do the preliminary work, but we have earmarked 2 weeks for that work. Moving forward, Evelyn Martucci, who is the engagement director as it relates to the federal grant piece of the audit, will be contacting city departments within the next couple of weeks to schedule some of the grant work. I've talked to Dave about primary field work. The post-June 30 work he's looking to for that to start the week of September 15th. So we blocked out that period of time to start the primary field work. So is that everyone on the committee comfortable with that time? Okay. So really, one thing that I'd like to try to see if we can figure out today, too, is any deadlines as it relates to draft reports and also as it relates to final reports. So does the committee have any thoughts on when they would like to receive draft audit reports?
I should pull out the calendar, but I think we try to aim for late November.
Yeah, we need to have a final issued not later than first week of December, last week of November. And then we back up. We really need to have our exit conference during the month of December.
Yeah.
With this committee anyway. We do with the finance. It's all right.
That's what we did this year.
And Matt, you traditionally do the exit conference twice, once with this committee and then a second time with the full finance committee meeting, sometimes December is a light calendar month for finance, but sometimes it's quite heavy. If we can pull it off and have the audit committee come to the finance committee, we may be able to be more efficient for you, but I don't think we can promise that.
And does the audit committee like to meet to discuss draft reports before finals issues?
Yes, please.
Okay.
And we actually already have audit committee dates set up and established, and I apologize, I'm not sure I can find them right here. But Shauna We'll definitely know them, so if we can, I know we've got an October date on the calendar and I think a December date already.
Okay. And my understanding from last year is that usually there's a meeting October sort of like in the middle of the audit to
exactly.
kind of get a status update.
Right.
Okay, great. And so Dave, you were looking for finals to be issued by first
right.
week in December, that
correct.
Basic time frame?
Correct.
So when would the committee like to have drafts so that you can absorb them, you can set up a meeting to discuss drafts before finals are issued? What would be a good timing?
So you have to back up. So figure out what date you're going to deliver to Dave, then try to come to us, I would have said 2 weeks before that, and
okay.
if you can, we definitely need at least a weekend to be able to read it. Is all that doable? The question is, that means you really have to be done with your work, I bet, right around November 1st.
Right. So
is that doable?
Yes. So we'd be looking then to say around early to mid-November issue drafts so that everyone has time to go through them, absorb them, et cetera. Set up a meeting for sometime in November, maybe later in November. Go over the drafts, issue finals first week of December at the very latest. That makes
and
sense.
Yes, and what's easiest for us, good morning, Shauna, relax, come on. this is Shauna, we've been joined by Shauna Sullivan, our fabulous clerk. We're just talking schedule, so your timing is good. What is easiest for us is to set dates now in April for any of those November and December meetings. Finance can't necessarily tell you exactly when their exit conference will be, but we can aim for something probably.
I think we should, the schedule last year in January I think works best.
In which case we'll do the audit committee separately from finance and do that earlier.
Are we doing, what were these meetings, Tuesdays and Thursdays? Or?
I also have to remind that Tony's is bad on Mondays. Gail's bad on Fridays.
Wednesday and Friday morning.
Wednesdays and Fridays. So I think, yes, we often drove to Tuesday and Thursday, although you had a conflict on Thursdays.
I'm probably going to be okay.
Okay. So Tuesdays or Thursday mornings would be great.
So tentatively the 9th?
Oh.
9th of December.
Do you remember, we have one already set up, but I just can't remember the date. It's on our calendar, so let's do this by email, finalize the actual dates. And we'll send that out to everybody.
Actually, I have it on my calendar for August, for December 16th.
Oh, thank you, Margaret. Which may be a little late. We may want to move that forward.
That's okay. Because we can issue and then just... I think what we want to keep is that hard and fast commitment to get the
right.
reports issued, and then we
okay.
can do the extra time. So.
May I suggest actually that Dave and Matt and Marissa work this out, mm-hmm. and we
Absolutely.
Will follow your advice as to the exact
Absolutely.
Dates.
Easy enough.
Perfect.
Okay. One other thing that I'd like to at least have an initial discussion about, I'm not sure if the committee has considered this or given this a lot of thought. As we indicated in our proposal, we're going to be doing two, what we like to call site visits, departmental visits, et cetera, as part of the audit. Typically speaking, we do like to do that work prior to June 30. Even in a perfect world, it'd be great if we could even do it the week of the 14th or the week of the 21st, because then that way we can focus on the financial statements in the September-October period of time. So I want to sort of open it up for discussion if the committee has any thoughts about what they might want to do with the two site visits.
When you think about a site visit, what are the parameters you look at as to why there? I mean, sometimes it's that we haven't been there in a while, but
sure.
what's your thinking?
I think that typically speaking, we do site visits for other clients as well. Typically, they tend to focus on areas related to cash receipts and revenues. Very rarely do you get involved in a site visit that's more on the expenditure-driven side. It's usually the cash receipt side. So that typically is a good area to focus on. Obviously, you'd like to focus on an area that, you know, if you've got an activity that collects $10,000 a year, well, you know, that's probably not worth the effort. So you also like to try to pick something where the cash receipts, the revenues, are at a decent number, so you feel like you're getting bang for your buck. That's really, but other than that, there's really no guidelines. We've done site visits for activities that do fall into the category of what we would consider maybe immaterial, but for whatever reason, maybe it's a political thing, who knows, that's what the city or town chose to do. So we really don't want to get too opinionated on what you select. It's really what the audit committee would find value out of.
Yes, Dave, the work that you did getting the receipts from the report you did for the risk, anything fall out from there that you felt would be a location to go to?
We talked about this a little bit before. I mean, I think what we might want to suggest was to talk about is maybe one school. Because, I mean, if you look at the cash receipts that are collected outside the treasurer's office, the largest areas that we identified were first and foremost special services permits. Second was police private duty detail. Police private duty detail we did last year, and we got a separate project that we're working on internally, so we probably rule it out. And then you get into all the school stuff.
As Dave and I chatted about, since we have done 2 years ago, we did do something with Parks and Rec, and last year we did police. This inspectional services does seem like a one that we should consider.
That would be helpful to us, too, because what Joe Mulvey from the IT department is working on is implementation of a new module of what's called Community Plus software, which is a brother or sister of Finance Plus, which is where General Ledger is. This Community Plus module for inspection services permits will track all the activity surrounding a building permit or a plumbing permit or a gas permit, all those kinds of things. And when it's fully implemented, it'll figure the permit fee and it'll actually generate the cash receipt transaction that we can then bring into the general ledger.
I think it's a great area to look into. We've done it for other communities. I would say that what we would want to do is define what exactly we'd be looking at because, as you know, they issue many, many, many permits. So would we be looking more at building permits, electrical permits? Is there a particular area of focus?
I don't know that we know the answer. Dave might.
I think we'd probably be looking more at this issue we have every year where we haven't got this module in place yet, but we have, say, $8 million for reporting and revenue on general ledger from inspection services permits. And then we've got that classified by all those categories
sure.
We're talking about. And then we generate these reports out of the building permit system, and Marissa can tell better than I. They don't match.
They don't speak.
And part of it has to do with the fact that people make applications and they figure it in the inspection services software. Yeah. Then they go back and they actually get their permit.
Mm-hmm.
It's based upon something else, but they don't modify the data.
Right.
Yeah.
And just identifying that again in concrete terms would probably help.
Yeah.
Instead of us trying to remember.
Just to add, you know, my husband does development in other cities and towns, and he has found that in Newton it's very loosey-goosey in terms of what you put down as a dollar amount in inspectional services, and they often don't circle back and do that reconciliation of what you actually really spent.
Okay,
So that was his, you know,
sure.
he works in Malden and other places where they're very meticulous about circling back with that final amount.
Okay. So maybe instead of focusing, I mean, we could, and I can talk to you about it with you, Dave, instead of maybe looking at first as, well, let's just look at building permits and electrical, maybe look at it more in totality.
Process.
In the ability to be able to take records from the Inspection Services Department and tie them into the GL somehow. So that would be a good, starting point.
Another wrinkle to consider are the violations and how we track and collect those dollars also.
I don't think that's going to take very long.
Right, because I don't think we're necessarily...
Right. Yeah. Now, when you say violations, are we talking parking?
No, in inspectional services.
Okay. Yeah.
Stick with inspectional services, okay. And it may be less of an audit issue and more of an internal process issue that we actually don't have a robust way of going back and checking if there are violations and therefore issuing fees.
I'm not sure if they even have their up-to-date ticket books, do they?
I'm not sure.
I don't think so.
So I don't think there's going to be too many fines to audit.
Which actually, in your experience with other cities and towns, it may be useful to understand if that is the norm for most communities or if somehow we seem a little different.
And on the school side, I will just say we did vote on the last day of school last night, and it is June 20th. So the schools will be closed that week after the 23rd.
Not sure that affects the administration quite as much.
The secretaries there.
Right.
So are you going to the high school?
Well, we kind of said they're good because management, because not only management had a comment that suggested we have an outside audit, and Sue and I talked about it.
Right.
And it's just because the cost of an outside audit, we said, well, maybe we could just have, as part of a management under review, take a look at a school a year, or at least a school student activity council.
There was another, when we were brainstorming, this is now a month ago or 6 weeks ago, Dave, the other thing we talked about, and I don't know whether that would trump schools or not, was whether the auditors would be helpful in looking at the payroll system. We talked about that there are recurring errors in the payroll which cause us all sorts of problems and become very time-consuming. And if that is something that an outside, fresh set of eyes could help us with or not.
Is there a Cliff Notes way of describing what kind of problems there have been?
These are principally clerical errors that occur not in the preparation of the weekly time and attendance, but rather a new employee setup. So what'll happen is that, I'll give you a perfect example. We started this new policy of new hires after July of 2012 who take city health insurance. The city's supposed to be making a 2.5% contribution, 2.5% of compensation contribution to the OPEB fund for them, but they need to be coded as such when they're set up as a new hire. Every month, I have Ann Pinero run a report for me that identifies new hires that have gone on the payroll, but for which, and who have health insurance, but who don't have a deduction. Because, you know, and it may be as simple, we think it may be as simple as a checklist for the clerical folks in the HR department to use when they put somebody on. We've had people put on, new police officers put on, who've had two retirement deductions, and so they've been double retirement. They've been a 7% and a 9% deduction taken on their paychecks. And then, I mean, it's easy enough to fix once you find it, but you've got to go back and refund that to folks. And there's a whole series of issues like that come up.
So it's not necessarily we're getting bad timesheets and people out of it. It's really more the initial point of new hire.
It's not time and attendance.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of a time and attendance issue in the school department where the payroll time and attendance is because it's not decentralized into the schools. It's done in the central payroll office at the Ed Center. There's a knowledge lag that the folks have, particularly at the beginning of school every year, about, you know, who's coming to work for the city and who's not coming to work for the city. And inevitably, we wind up generating checks for folks that come back to us because those folks never actually went to work for the schools.
Okay.
But that's become less a problem over the years than this this other problem. And this other problem may go away with the hiring an HR director. We haven't had an HR director in a while.
Yeah. I mean, that would certainly be a valid area for us to tackle. If you were to tell me, look into payroll generically, I'd say, well, you could spend, you know, 1,000 hours on payroll. But if it would be more along the lines of the clerical process of new employees and some of these problems that you've mentioned, that's certainly a valid area as well.
Another wrinkle that you had mentioned is sometimes also when a person transfers from one department to another, while not technically a new employee, the same glitches occur at that point as well.
There's some unique things about the way the payroll system and the HR system functions. And one in particular is that if a person has more than one pay type, in other words, they have longevity in addition to regular pay, there's a separate screen that someone in HR needs to be aware of, and they need to change the home code on both the primary pay and the longevity. Because what we find regularly, or not frequently, is that somebody, Tony, transfers from treasury to executive, and what happens is his salary moves, but when it comes time for him to get his longevity is still being charged to treasury. It's more nuisance things than it is.
So, if I heard correctly earlier, there are two areas that we're going to...
And we've been talking about three.
Well, I think inspectional services is a definite. It makes all the sense in the world. As far as a school, and I think maybe we're thinking about a high school if we go do it.
Could be, yeah.
Versus HR, I would prefer to let the new HR person come in. Give the list of the things that you're mentioning and allow them to straighten it out and maybe this year do a school. But I think we should give the person a chance. We've got them coming in at the next finance meeting, right? So they're due to start this month. So let's give them a chance before we sick the auditors on.
Yeah.
Because all that stuff is in HR, right? None of it's a department issue. That should all be...
departmental issues.
Right,
though.
Right.
And there might be more fee collection also at middle schools than there are at the high school in terms of direct pay instead of... Because of the system that they set up with the Unigold where you pay your sports fees and stuff online through the website, there may be more fees that get collected at the middle schools because the middle schools still collect activity fees and the high schools don't anymore, and day is 1,000 students, so it might, you know, a large middle school like that might be worth looking at.
So last year, we had comments on day,
day
and Anger.
Yes.
I vaguely remember it was Newton, Marissa, if you could probably help me out, it was Newton North that we also internally did the deep dive on.
Yes. I believe both high schools have been...
right, I think we all... have you?
Yes. I think back in 2008 and 2009, if I'm not mistaken.
I have it as down as 2006 and 8.
Oh, okay.
We did some high school, we did the high schools.
It might make sense to do it. But then on the other hand, there are some middle schools that have never been done.
Correct.
So.
Perhaps if I could suggest that Dave and Sue Jakowski talk and perhaps come back with a recommendation and let Shauna know so that the committee knows. But it sounds directionally like a middle school that hasn't been done recently or at all. Might be the way to go. And internally, we'll continue to do both high schools ourselves. And I think we always do one middle school and one elementary school internally. So it's not like...
Do you do one elementary school, too?
Could.
A small one?
I think, if I'm not mistaken, we did two schools last year, and I think we really focused more on the cash receipt side.
That's what this
so,
would be.
Yeah,
this
if
would
you
be
wanted to just focus on the cash receipt side, yes. If you wanted to pick one school and say, you know what, do receipts and disbursements, you could go that route, or you could go two schools, cash receipts.
I'm not so worried about disbursements, because what happens is that when we reimburse, we get the documentation for what we're reimbursing.
Yep.
And I'm looking at the bank statement at the end of the year, and somebody in the school department is looking at the bank statement every month to make sure that there are no disbursements other than the ones that they're asking us to reimburse that are going out of the
So there's better control.
The receipts that I think they worry about.
Have we ever audited the state reimbursement for Medicaid for students to be able to get that?
No, because to be honest with you, we have so little understanding of how that works. The schools have a consultant that totally drives that process. The only thing that's been frustrating about that is how long it takes from the end of a quarter until they even make application for reimbursement. And then it's another period.
And they have to go to UMass, and then they do another thing if they are.
Do you recall if that's ever been picked up in the federal grant audit side at all as a major program? Because I know it's been a major program in other communities, too. I just don't know if Newton's fall into that category.
But certainly large enough to be a major program. I don't know
why. Because it's possible that we may have done some federal grant work
But probably not. Never get singled out, because what happens is that the way we fund the grant audits, the federal grant audits, is that they're charged back to the grant. And in the case of the Medicaid reimbursement, it's general fund revenue. And so the money for paying for it would have to be out of my budget.
Yeah. And well, I only mentioned it because it was zeroed out in this year's school budget. There's no line for it in the school budget this year. It was zeroed out.
We have an anticipation. There's a reduction supposedly coming next year, but Warren has an estimate for next year.
Right, but it is not a line item in the budget this year.
Well, for the consultant?
No, for the Medicaid revenues is not a line item.
Now, the only problem with doing that as a site visit is if you are relying on a vendor, then it can get a little bit tricky, because now you got to coordinate with the vendor, and the vendors might be sitting there saying, well, what are you looking at this? Well, who knows? But, I mean, that's a potential area as well.
Is that going to get, I mean, that's going to get looked at more in terms of the single audit work, right?
It would tend to get more, especially if it's a major grant, obviously.
And if you select it, then it's going to fall outside the fee arrangement for the...
If Medicaid reimbursement meets the criteria of being selected as a major grant, then there would be no point in doing any kind of site visit for it, because that would really cover looking into the internal controls related to it, etc.
So it'd be done as part of the single audit, or it'd be done as part of...
I'd have to check with Evelyn, too, and see how it's shaken out in terms of the major grant determination, whether it falls into that category.
We have money in the budget for one single audit review that's general fund, so that this were to be the one, that would be fine.
What kind of dollars are we talking about?
It's $4,600 per, I think it's $4,600 per federal program.
No, I meant how many, in the Medicaid.
It's whatever, any child that is severe special needs is on SCHIP, and if they're on SCHIP, then we need to be billing for services that are eligible, either Medicaid, and that means tracking them at the school level, aggregating them. Congress has designated the state medical school as the administrator of these funds, so then it all has to go out to UMass Medical to where they aggregate and then make application to Medicaid on behalf of the
This
state.
May be 100 students that we're talking about.
If the child has severe special needs, most of the time, even if the family is covered, they will put the child on this check.
$900,000 last year.
Yeah.
You still need parental permission?
You do. Yeah. And that's always been the hang up.
Right. Most school districts do an opt out, not an opt in.
I think we're opt in.
Yeah.
But that's school committee policy.
So the answer to your question is it's probably worth it if it's close to $1 million.
Sounds like it would be.
I thought it was less than that.
What I plan to do is to check in with our grants compliance specialist and see if that particular program would fall under the category of being a major federal grant. If so, then you're going to get covered through that process. Mm-hmm. So if that ends up being the case, probably go back to the school idea. So that's sort of where we're at, I think, is special services is a definite, and then the second one is either going to be Medicaid reimbursements for a couple schools.
And Dave, I think we really are dependent on you to help us put that out and keep us informed.
We might try to do both, though. Even if we pay for a separate, I mean, even if it's right. not a federal major program.
It could be
it could be done. Could we opt to have it designated as a major program locally?
You would have to, when you say major grant program, it has to meet certain criteria. So if it meets the dollar threshold, which it's sounding like it would.
I think it does.
The reason why it wouldn't have been audited in the past is it might be deemed low risk. Possibly we audited it a few years ago, didn't find any problems with it. And so if you audit a grant a couple years in a row and there's no findings, you almost have no choice but to call it a low-risk program, in which case you then have to pick a program that is considered more high-risk. Mm-hmm. So, but it could be that we haven't looked into this program in a long enough time that we'd be able to call it high-risk. So that's something I can coordinate with Evelyn and see. So once I get the answer to that question, is can it be a major grant? I think everything else will fall into place in terms of what we're doing for the second site visit. Okay. Does that sound fair?
The only commitment on those federal, that one grant that we have funding for in our budget now, I'm thinking, is that we still haven't received our FEMA money for the February of 2013 storm that was declared a blizzard. And if that comes, that comes before the end of this, before June. That'll have to be included.
Yeah, it would have been dollar amount-wise well over $300,000.
Matt, generally on risk, where are you in the timing of doing your own risk assessment of Newton and maybe changes in the environment in the city or the federal to come to us and say, you know, when we look at what's changed and we look at attention that's being given to it from regulatory people, when do you do that?
That would be the preliminary field work that starts the week of April 14th.
Even your general thinking about that. Do you wait till you do your field work to do it?
Well, this is actually one of the things that we can accomplish at today's meeting, is if there's anything that is going on with the city that you feel like the auditors should be aware of, that is certainly something that I'd love to talk about here at today's meeting. But the risk assessment process really comes down to the main part of it is looking at your systems of internal controls, and revisiting those. We have to revisit those every single year. Sit down with Dave in his office and go over the internal controls, check to see that they're still in place, etc. That's really the main part of the risk assessment process. It does require us to actually be in the field and actually look at transactions, you know, inquire of certain personnel, etc. In terms of outside factors that might be going on that create risk, that's something where this is a great forum to communicate those things to me and Marissa so that we might be aware of them and put them on our radar screen. So is there anything in terms of, you know, I'll give you some examples. Has there been any major areas of turnover? Have there been any new major programs, initiatives, activities going on in the city? Anything like that?
Systems,
things of that nature. Anything going on that we should
be
aware
of? XP? We use XP?
Not in a big way if we do. I mean, there are some that still are.
We're here today is the day that they stop supporting it. So, I mean, I think that's something that we all have to know. So I am very interested in the whole cybersecurity area. I don't know if the city has done anything in their systems that is different from last year that would require going in to check. But we do know the outside world has become increasingly sophisticated since a year ago. And I don't know how you're going to do that or what you would do, but for me, I think that's one of the biggest risks that any organization has, whether it's reputation risk or just generally getting in. And
I agree, because particularly the school department and what we've been asked to collect in regards to data for both the federal and the state government, we have an immense amount of information on each student in the school system.
What are you doing in that area?
Well, one thing that, in terms of IT, if you're talking about information technology, that would definitely require some specialists. That's one of the good things about now that you're with a national firm, is we have people within our company that specialize in IT. So one of the things that I'll look in to see what IT specialists the company does have and what we could do in terms of, now you're looking at more in terms of, I assume, you know, when it comes to things like what happened to Target things of that nature. Is that what you mean by cybersecurity? Like,
yeah, just any way anyone could get into our system, as Margaret was saying.
And that's personal data. People.
We capture a lot of personal data.
Right.
It's not credit card data necessarily.
Yeah, but it's extremely personal data.
Very sensitive data.
Right.
You know, in the hospitals and when people leave the laptops on the buses.
So it's data protection.
It's data protection, probably more than others.
Or it could be employee fraud somehow. Employee manipulating the system to benefit themselves.
Well, you have
themselves.
Employee social security numbers.
Yeah, but that, one of the nice things about our payroll system is that unless you've got super access, you don't have complete access to a social security number.
Well, I do have to say that when I signed up for the city benefits, I was really amazed that they wanted to see my social security card. I was very uncomfortable about that.
That's a school department policy.
It was very weird. I've never had anyone ask for that.
That's a city policy.
Really? Didn't answer mine.
I got something the other day saying that I had to update. Now they remind me. I forgot I have to do it. Maybe I shouldn't do it. But they said that they have to have updated information on me, and I have to bring either my Social Security card or my passport.
Well, is that probably. Kelly? Or is that?
Did you get it?
I got it.
Is that Kelly or is that the HR?
It's HR.
It was HR. It wasn't
yeah,
Kelly.
It's HR.
Okay, so maybe they've done something.
I brought my passport.
When they
told me that
they didn't
was
ask you for yours. Are you talking about back in
1990?
I don't have your Social Security number.
Yeah. They wanted my Social Security number. I have no idea where it is.
It sounds like they're doing something different.
Yeah.
Did
anyone?
It sounds like
I have no idea where it is. You know?
It's caught up to me. You know, they don't have, they must be.
The federal government is requiring that it's verify citizenship.
Partly the I-9, but it's every new hire. It's changed since 2001.
Yeah, it was the I-9. Like, we got a 12-page email that was supposed to, but page 9 or something we have to fill out.
Yeah, it's only one page.
Bring the documentation.
We got a visit from somebody from the federal government.
It sounds like somebody all of a sudden realized they needed to have this or was supposed to have it.
Yeah, we're supposed to see the Social Security card.
Yeah. So I would be interested in your national firm.
Sure.
Expertise is out there rather than committing to something right away, but just generally knowing what are you doing in that area.
Typically speaking, if you're talking about protection of data and things of that nature, it's usually not a focus of the audit because our focus is on the financial statements. It's really not necessarily protection of like personal data, but I would love to have a conversation with some of the IT people within the company. It may have to be something outside the scope of the audit. I'll throw that out there, but let me have the conversation and see, what it is they've done for other communities, and we can discuss it further. But it's typically not something that is a big focus area of the audit, personal data, things of that nature. But it's certainly a valid concern. We'll see what they do.
You could look at the strength of the firewall.
The other question that's on my mind is we've had the repeated comment over the years about GASB 68, the new pension requirements, and I know we're all aware of it, but I don't know, other than that, is there something else that's supposed to happen this year from you or to you, to Dave, or other than we know it's coming? Are there literal action?
You actually mentioned to me a possibility of a meeting, I believe, in July that is being pondered that would involve Siegel, a representative from PRIT, and also myself, possibly Marissa, sort of like a round table type discussion. Maybe you can tell me about
that. Yeah, no, I mentioned to Matt and I mentioned to the people with the PRIM board that when we had the management letter meeting, we talked about tentatively trying to schedule something in July, August, and Matt said, no problem. Polter Disco said he would get, forget the guy's first name, but Mr. Hanna, who's the director of finance for the
I want to say Doug, but I may be wrong.
Get him out here, too. And we can probably get the actuaries, but we're less worried about the actuaries. We don't know what we don't know about implementation.
Right.
Here's what I'd say, though. Even though I'm not concerned, Siegel's a great company, it would be great if they were part of this discussion.
Sure.
Because I think it's great to have all the parties that are involved in the implementation to sort of be, in the planning process. So if something gets brought up, where I say as the auditor, well, wait a second, that doesn't make sense, or I'm saying something and the actuary is saying, no, that doesn't make sense, we can kind of get on the same page. Right. So I'd say that, to me, this is the year, you know, GASB 67, 68, you're not talking about until FY15,
right.
But this is definitely the time
right.
to be doing the legwork on the planning and making sure that the people, you know, particularly the actuary is really the one that has a lot of work to do.
Well, the good thing about scheduling the meeting in July or late June is that we're going to have the 1/1/13 valuation
right.
from Siegel, and we've been clear with Siegel from day one that that report has to have all the displays
mm-hmm.
that are required.
The future ones will be in this
yeah.
year. Good.
So, and we also had a little to do with Siegel when, after we had the last retirement board meeting where we had the update with the PRIM board about what their long-term return assumptions were. We actually gave them the number we wanted them to use, and they said, well, that's a little bit lower than they were planning on using. We said, well, this is why we need to use that number.
Mm-hmm.
There was a little pushback because they were concerned that other clients were going to feel compelled to do the same thing, and we said, well, that's your problem, not ours.
Right.
Our problem is that, you know, we want to put a number, we want to discount at a rate that we can defend.
Right.
Because you guys will be knocking our cap off if we don't.
Sure.
And so, I think, I'd say, they'll be fine, but it doesn't hurt anything to happen.
I think it'd be great,
yeah.
and like you said, the 1/1/13 will be out.
Yeah.
We'll have had a chance to look at it as well.
Yeah.
So I really think that's sort of the first stage, I'd say, is a meeting of that nature would be, I think, extremely beneficial in terms of laying the foundation.
I'd like to
yeah.
be part of that
well,
meeting if
yeah,
I can.
It's actually going to be the audit committee's meeting.
Great.
I
wasn't
clear.
Have
a date to
terrific.
Give anybody.
Great.
I just said that.
So that'll be part of yeah. this. Great.
So the first time that the financials have to reflect all this is
FY15. So not the same.
What we had in FY13, you gave us a sample of what we got a sample
yeah,
of the financials as if
okay, I'm sorry. I'm not
oh, okay.
Yeah,
no, so we got a sample.
Yeah. Well,
and
a small sample, just on the financial statements. What we're more concerned about is the note disclosures. The
right, but so we got a sample. So now what we're saying is we're going to go behind those numbers
yeah.
to understand fully the assumptions
right.
that are in there.
Right.
And whether or not they're ones that we're comfortable with.
Right.
Yeah, I think this is a good year to do that in.
Absolutely.
You better know what it is because
yes.
the year you have to put it on the books. Have there been any other major people changes in the last year in an area that would affect the financials? Major people, you know? No. Okay.
What about when an employee leaves, either the city side or the school side, in a business, if they leave voluntarily, then they do not go on unemployment. They cannot collect unemployment. Do we have any issues, or do we have a system to track when an employee leaves, whether is the city charged for unemployment the way a company is?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we reimburse.
Because we noticed that we had an issue where people left voluntarily on occasion and then applied for unemployment. And there isn't a good tracking system there.
It's a problem in the school department because people at the paraprofessionals are hired year to year, and
yeah.
then they apply for unemployment,
mm-hmm.
but they're only hired year to year.
Yeah.
So there's somebody in the city hall and somebody in the school department who's getting every notice from the DUA.
Yeah.
And we did. It's HR. We did.
So it is tracked. I assure you it's tracked by somebody here.
But there was someone who resigned, left the state, and was able to collect.
That's
the
allowed.
The state contested it.
But it's allowed.
We never knew it was allowed, yeah. We thought, like you're saying, that you quit.
They can quit, but if they resign from their next employer, if they are terminated by the next employer within 12-month period, the city has a reimbursable method. As municipalities, we get to choose whether we pay a tax or whether we just pay our own claims. But our own claims include anybody who leaves us and then subsequently within the next year gets terminated by the second
mm-hmm.
employer.
Really?
We get a prorated share of, based on the earnings of that 12-month period,
mm-hmm.
we pay a pro rata.
Even though they resign from the city.
Yeah, that we get caught.
Voluntarily resign. But even voluntary resignation is a murky area.
Because
sometimes we think it's a voluntary termination, but the person ends up claiming, well, they had to go to New Mexico to follow their spouse, so we thought it was voluntary, but they thought it was for a legitimate reason, and they end up receiving a benefit.
People get
There's going to be lots of unemployment claims that you roll your eyes and say, why? And
We're paying for somebody now who resigned. We have a letter that said that they resigned to go to back to school, and we're paying the unemployment.
Yeah.
We contested it, and we lost.
Yeah. So this is probably you don't audit unemployment claims enough.
Is there anything from the legal side and what's happened in the last year in the city, or exposure to fraud that would make us think we maybe ought to look at? Even if it isn't, even by itself, if it doesn't look like it's big dollars, if it lends itself to a legal claim or a fraud claim or reputation claim. So that's just sort of a general comment.
Do we have any programs where the city is handing out money?
Let me know. Like the apartment renewal.
Or renovation grants.
Yeah, grants for apartments for elderly.
Well, yeah, I mean,
that's something that involves risk at all.
The Community Development Authority makes the rehab loans and grants,
right.
And through the Community Preservation Fund, they make them to different developers.
And how, I have a little dinky program of water, water rate, rebates. Yeah. And I'm supposed to sit there and look at people and make sure they qualify. Well, any of these programs where you're handing out public money that people have to qualify for. Sometimes how effective we are monitoring.
These they're talking about the person that people are qualifying by virtue of the vote of the mayor and the board of aldermen. Is they're designating who's going to get the CPA funding,
mm-hmm.
and then there's going to be a contract with it. What you're talking about is going to be more in the nature of like this tax, this tax committee that comes out.
Right.
But we only have $3,000 in the fund,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and there's a committee of citizens and some of the
right
who get together to decide. Who's going to actually get the awards?
Mm-hmm.
I suppose the assessors with certain hardship abatements or exemptions.
Right, but even that renovation program, is that all tight? Is it as tight?
That's the one that Maureen got into trouble over because she's requiring all the stuff to be done by competitive bid, even though it's a third party.
Yeah, yeah.
So we make a grant to a third party to build affordable housing. What happens is that third party has to demonstrate to the city that, at least for the money that the city's spending on it, those contracts have been acquired through a competitive process.
And we regularly look at the free reduced lunch program?
That is typically a major federal grant.
It's always a federal major.
And what about our MSBA activities that we're going to be doing in the next several years?
That comes under the scope of the audit as well.
Okay.
Because I believe you have an elementary school project that's two of them. Yeah, that's part of the financial statement audit.
That gets nitpicked at the state level to
the
point that, it's...
Right.
With the override funds, and I guess we show separately in the financials what they're being spent for. Is that right?
We agreed that we were going to put a schedule in the back of the doc of the financials this year.
Although my understanding from Maureen is she's not putting it in the budget book, and that she said, because I somehow asked her about it in the last 2 weeks, and she said she was going to give it as a separate piece of paper to the finance committee.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to track up.
But this is in the audit financial statements.
Oh,
this year's budget,
remember we
earmarked where the $8.2 million was going to go.
Right.
We're going to put together a schedule, which is
going to
go in September. Is it our side or is it not? It's not our side. It's going to be...
like additional information.
Yeah, back with the, yeah.
Right. I thought there was a promise to the citizens that they would get a reporting on.
Well, it is. It's going to be in the category. Okay. It's not going to be in the budget.
All right. Now, what about all the development work that's being done, and all the plans, whether it's on Route 9 or Riverside or Austin Street? We have in the city a tremendous amount of talk and action in various stages.
More talk than action, right?
So not a lot of dollars.
Other than the schools, seriously.
Yeah. Okay. So, but I think as we start, as the city starts to do it, it's good to kind of have a mindset of that as a, almost as a bucket of new things to think about, even though individually they don't seem like they're much.
Well, that's really either, it's either tax revenue or permitting revenue.
Well, Austin Street is surplusing property. Mm-hmm. Which is being purchased from us.
True.
Well, so what would happen is that any money that we collect in connection with that, by law, has to be set aside for a particular purpose, and they would look at that. Mm-hmm. But I don't think they would look at whether or not we, the process we used was the right mm-hmm. process or not. That would be beyond that.
Yeah, I think that's beyond
that. But do you have an opinion?
I have an opinion on a lot of things. I'll skip that one.
He was just hired.
That's right.
Any monies collected is supposed to be I was just saying that in the Austin Street project, I think that the report said that any monies collected from that would have to stay within the Austin's within the Newville area.
That would be, though, as far as I know, that would be a decision the mayor and the alderman.
Yes, it doesn't have to. That's a choice.
That's a decision of the mayor.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a resolution, but as you know, the only thing we control is the minimum price, and everything else is by through resolution. So, but you're right. That was what we intended.
Are there any costs or any revenues associated with this growing number of area councils? Is there anything there that
My understanding is that we are not funding them. They have to do their own fundraising. And what we're working on is trying to see if we can do some kind of home rule petition to allow them to keep their own books and not have their monies flowing through the city. But pardon me?
Do they? No, they're not.
No, but it's become more of a gray area as the number of area councils have grown.
Yeah.
And if you look specifically at our charter, it seems to imply that their dollars should be going through the city. Mm-hmm. And I think the law department is.
Well, we have a document.
There's also the issue of staffing. They've requested staffing, and there's pushback by the city on that.
So I think we may have covered what we wanted to cover this morning. Any other items on anybody's mind? Sounds like. So clear that you're going working with Dave and Sue. You're going to think through the second deep dive and be in touch with us, and we'll clarify some of the schedule items, both the year-end types of things as well as the pension reporting.
Yeah.
Scheduling on that. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the subcommittee, the audit subcommittee, has already met with the internal departments who either had partially resolved or unresolved or new comments. And I think we are feeling very comfortable that they are all in good shape, and we're hopeful that they aren't reoccurring. And the Risk Assessment Committee has met once and is beginning to get our arms around the type of scope of work that we're going to be doing. And we may very well reach out to Matt and Marissa for some informal feedback as we move forward with
Absolutely.
That, too.
Then there were three areas on the management comments that you've been raising, at least for several years. One is the risk assessment process. Mm-hmm. Two is the financial policies and procedures. Mm-hmm. And three is disaster recovery. So as you go through your work this year, we don't want the same stuff as we got before. We don't want, you should have a policy, or you don't do it yourself.
Understood.
Okay? So you want a little more meat on the bones.
Seems to me, from looking at the financial policy procedure management response last year, it seems like a pretty decent amount of work's been done on financial policies and procedures. And it's one of the things I plan on talking with Dave when we come back out here on the 14th, is to go over the manager letter in detail.
Right.
And we've already had some informal discussions. But it seems to me like that one we're on the right path. Risk assessment, I feel like from conversations with Dave that you're heading down the right direction. I think it really comes down to formalizing the process a little bit and sort of documenting what your risk assessment process is going to be and what your monitoring process is going to be moving forward. And in terms of disaster recovery, again, by looking at the response, it looked like a lot of work was being done, the wheels were in motion. So I'm anticipating, it seems to me like those comments won't be hanging around, but that's something that I can talk to Dave a little bit more about.
The fourth one was police details, but we actually also think that we have a process in place.
And does that relate to possibly getting that departmental receivable module from Pentimation? Is that, I think...
Yeah, we haven't really talked. When we had the subcommittee meeting, we talked about trying to send the police private duty payments to a lockbox instead of having them all go over to the police station, because there's an error. There's close to $2 million in receipts that they're handling over there, plus they don't really want to do it. As we started to dig into that, and we're going to do that, but the problem that we're running into is that the billing software police are using, which was homegrown, won't permit a scan line on the bill. And so we kind of have gone back to the notion that we need new receivable software. So we have a demonstration from the people who supply our general ledger software, I think it's the 14th, of the module that would accommodate presumably the police detail billing. It would also be used for the water and sewer payment plans. It could be used for the school rental, school buildings. Who's going to be there? It could be used for a lot of things that we currently bookkeep in Excel workbooks, and I'd mentioned that to Matt.
Okay.
That's going to be an appropriation request, though. But it's like $22,000.
And last night we voted all the E-rate money that we get to go to disaster recovery kind of things in terms of data for the schools and in conjunction with the city.
So as a new partner, my expectation is that you are going to ask a lot of questions and that management understands that you're asking them. And we know it's both for your education, but it's also for you to get a sense of what's going on and maybe a fresh eye on what it is that we're doing. Because we all get so convinced that we've spent time on this, we're doing it right, and, you know, with Melissa. So do not feel like we're going to view it as an indictment of your predecessor if you come and say, well, you know, I think you could do this differently.
Sure.
Because the
sure.
world changes.
Absolutely. And that's part of the reason why we do partner rotation and why it makes sense to do it for the city of Newton, is for a fresh set of eyes.
Right.
And to sort of meet, you know, I might see things that, you know, if you're on an audit for 10 years, yeah, you might not see things the way someone else coming from the outside will. So, no, that's definitely one of the benefits that I'll bring to the table, is to sort of see things with the first set of eyes.
We just don't want you to think that we'll be shocked or upset.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We'll actually be shocked and upset if you say, no, I didn't see anything.
No, that's not going to be my mindset, that's for sure.
Did you get from us what you needed?
Yes, I really wanted to tackle scheduling matters, future meetings, site visits. I think we definitely at least laid much of the groundwork on that. So from my perspective, I don't know if Marissa, I think from our perspective, we feel like we accomplished what we'd like to today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What is the meeting schedule in October? We don't have a November meeting.
But it strikes me we need a November meeting for the prelim and then December for the final. So we may actually be able to eliminate October or move October to November. And we may move June to July, possibly.
If we can participate in that meeting, that'd be fine.
That would be useful.
Yeah, there was a
from...